Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And I just got to ask myself, folks, why is it that so many of you don't get involved? Why are you not getting directly involved in what we're doing? As a matter of fact, there's no reason for you not to be involved in petitioning government for the redress of grievances. There is no doubt in my mind that because we stopped doing this at the turn of the 20th century, before the turn of the 20th century, and I believe that had more to do with the fact that after the Civil War and Reconstruction, more and more people were just, you know, left alone, and you went off and did your things. And while we were minding our own business, government was doing all sorts of little evil things, creating corporations and so forth. I'll get into that a little bit more later. But bottom line, there is no reason for you not to be involved specifically in reclaiming the Republic. The only way we can reclaim the Republic is for we the people to empower those good public servants, those leaders in your community, to rise up and demand compliance of the Constitution. This is why what we're doing in these petitions is irrefutable. Irrefutable. I understand that there's people out there that want to teach the Constitution. That's great. And as a matter of fact, I think that there's a few out there that are actually doing a good job in teaching the Constitution, but that's not enough. That is not enough. We need to actually start establishing constitutional compliance committees in every county, which would force, there should be an office of constitutional compliance. When everything is all said and done, when you've got a state that is firing on all cylinders of the Constitution, then every county would have an office that would be the constitutional compliance office, just to make sure. This is where you would actually petition. You'd petition this office, and this office would make sure that there's a full tracking and transparency of what's going on and who might be actually guilty and suspended and actually removed from office. These offices of compliance will actually immediately suspend somebody if it actually comes up that that person has violated. Now, I'm going to tell you, the way corruption goes, corruption is always about not being held accountable. Look the other way. Let me do this. You want me to look away for your small infraction. Well, you got to look away for mine. That's how it is. And that's what, 9 times out of 10, this is how our public servants get compromised. You know, they get, somebody gets pictures of them with barnyard animals or some, you know, just atrocious behavior. Oh, well, you know, okay, you've got me. Folks, you know, if we were living right, there would be no pictures. If we were actually doing what we were supposed to be doing, this, in a way, I have to look at, you know, the problems that we're looking at. The problems come home to roost with us. When I see all of these people that are behaving so atrociously, these leftists out there, all I can think of, what happened to their parents? How screwed up were their parents to screw them up that far? Look at our education system. The indictment of how far we have drifted as a society, there's enough blame to share for everybody. You know, Hillary Clinton took a good paradigm, a good metaphor, and she made a real evil book called It Takes a Village. Now, there's no doubt in my mind we're all better off if we all, you know, reinforce good moral standards and enlightenment, not depravity. And so what we need to do is we really need to actually start taking accountability for ourselves and responsibility and say, you know what? I'm at fault here. We're all at fault. If you haven't seen my video speaking to some county commissioners, you know, I'd welcome you to watch that, because at the very beginning, I basically admit that we all have blood on our hands. We all have blood on our hands, folks. If we have not been holding government accountable for over 100 years, that means that you, your parents, and your grandparents have blood on their hands for allowing government to do things like the Social Security program, like all of these assumptions of powers. When are you going to stand up? Before it's too late, hopefully, because... This really isn't a funny matter. This really isn't laughable. But it is so bad that, you know, a person like me, sometimes when I'm in pain, I laugh. And sometimes when I see things that are just, you know, it's just, that's the old, I guess that's a defensive mechanism. Or maybe it's a mechanism that I just don't want to show weakness. I don't know. I'm not a psychiatrist. Nor do I care to be. I'm a constitutionalist, and that's what I care to be, because I know almost every problem that we're facing as a society today is stemming from unconstitutional actions and bad behavior by our public servants. When we talk about our government, our government is not that Capitol building. Our government is not the White House. Our government are not edifices, nor is it a plot of land. Our government in America is the people. Those people who we elect to represent us, they're the ones who make the choice when they walk in to take their oath, whether they're going to, because first off, they need to understand what that oath is and what specifically oath they're supposed to be taking. If they take an oath that is not the constitutional oath in supporting the Constitution, and they have to take bonds out, as far as I'm concerned, then that person is not fulfilling their oath and their obligation to the voters and to the supreme law of the land. This whole concept of bonds is not within the Constitution. If the federal government is going to require a public servant to sign a bond before they enter into public office as an indemnification for them, then that has to be amended to the Constitution. If you start looking at the history of what and everything that was created, you can't sue and get compensation for a public servant's crimes or their behavior. This is why it is absolutely imperative that we vote for people with impeccable character. When we talk about our government and holding our government accountable, that's us. In other words, if you think you can sue your government, then you're just suing yourself. There is no course there. There is no path of reparations from government. Bottom line, if government is making a mistake, the course of rectifying the problem is getting them into compliance. There's no reparations. Oh, well, you did these bad things. No, we have to hold them accountable. The problem is we asked them to do bad things. There were people who asked Andrew Jackson to get rid of the Indians, I believe it was the Cherokee, down in the southern states. And, you know, I don't know all the details. It doesn't really matter to me. What matters to me is getting things right. There's no mechanism. I mean, so I had this conversation yesterday, and I'm just going to dive into it real quick, that if there were lands purchased by the Cherokee, they had deeds, and they were kicked off those lands, then that is their land, because there has to be this trail of how they sold that land, because Jackson didn't have the authority to just take their property, nor did he have the authority to do what he did. But the one thing that can be restored to the descendants of those people who were put on the Trail of Tears, to restore their property that they actually purchased, that they owned. Now, if there was a claim whatever it was, whether they paid money for it or whether these were hard claims, and these were taxed Indians. See, there was this, and this is the problem. There should have been a complete assimilation of the Indian tribes. It didn't mean that they couldn't practice their cultural beliefs. The problem was that there were theocratic people in America that wanted to enforce very specific doctrines of religion. And so they actually, I'll just say, persecuted a lot of people. There was religious, and the Indians were ones that were religiously persecuted. So, these are difficult conversations that we all need to have. We can't avoid these things. But bottom line, everybody in America today is a U.S. citizen, even Indians living on reservations. They are U.S. citizens. Are they not under the jurisdiction of the federal government? The 14th Amendment clearly applies that all persons born in the United States, whether their parents are naturalized or not, and under the jurisdiction of the United States, are citizens of the United States and the states where they reside. So technically, if you're an Indian in a reservation in Missouri or in South Dakota or in California, you are both a U.S. citizen and a citizen of that state. Now, you're also a member of a tribe. Is a tribe a government, or is a tribe a theocracy? Is it a culture? You know, I'm not that scientific person, but I do know that when it comes to citizenship in the United States, there's a U.S. citizen and then there are hyphenated citizens. And I believe the hyphenated citizens are the problem, because bottom line, we're all in this together in protecting liberty for all. As Teddy Roosevelt, the one thing that I admired Teddy Roosevelt for was his speech on the hyphenated American. I believe he gave it to the Knights of Columbus in the mid-19-teens or 1920, something like that, where he actually spoke about how anybody that puts something in front of America is putting that ahead of America, instead of actually supporting. And, you know, I understand that there were lots of really bad paradigms, but I've gone down this rat hole. It's Feedback Friday, so let me pull out and let me get on to how you can get involved. Now, one of the things that I do need to tell you, because this is huge, if you think that if you sign one of our petitions that you are going to be susceptible to government intrusions in your life because they're going to have your name, think again. Government has no right to know all the names of people. I mean, it's one thing to have people that are leading the cause, but those of you who signed these petitions, your personal information will never be surrendered. We've yet to ever, and we will not surrender your personal information. This is why if you don't want to put your name and, you know, email address and anything else, that's fine. You have to sign it, though. Whether that's an X, whoever is standing there witnessing, if you want to put an X on that sheet, that's fine with us. You don't have to expose yourself. Bottom line, any and all personal information, this is our signature disclosure statement for you. Any and all personal information provided on the signature sheet will be withheld from government under the protection of the First Amendment. And it basically says Congress, and actually the First Amendment has been amended because of the 14th Amendment, and we'll get into that right after this. But so when I state Congress, it actually should state, no government shall make no law abridging the right of the people to petition government for the redress of grievances. Obviously, there's some dot, dot, dots there. I mean, I'm just cutting out what is, I'm not adding any words, I'm just basically streamlining everything to show you the right of petition and its protections. It cannot be abridged. They can't come along and say, you have to give us the full name, address, and all of these things. You only need to be a U.S. citizen. And as far as we're concerned, the person that is there watching people sign this sheet, they're confirming one way or the other, and we trust their judgment, that you are a U.S. citizen. The 14th Amendment protects this right from not being abridged by any government when it says the right of petition shall not be abridged for any reason, as well as based under the 14th Amendment, that is the right of the people to be secure in their, so this is the 4th Amendment, not the 14th, I'm sorry. So the reason why you have this right to have your name secured from government, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures. In other words, this has to be a criminal activity. In other words, they actually have to make petitioning your government a crime, which means they have to amend the Constitution and take away this right and then make it a crime. And so if you understand, then the Fourth Amendment could apply, because in charging you of a crime of accusing the government of bad doing, then they can actually go to a judge. But a judge cannot constitutionally sign a warrant to obtain your information for signing that sheet and investigating you for that crime. Do you understand what I'm saying? So the Fourth Amendment also protects you. The 14th Amendment actually lays over both of these two, the First and Fourth Amendment, when it says, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges and immunities of a U.S. citizen. So they can't abridge your privileges and immunities of your protection of your personal information, nor can they abridge your right to petition them. Abridge means diminish, take away. So the person collecting the signature has the responsibility to ensure all persons signing these petitions are U.S. citizens, exercising their inalienable and constitutional rights to petition government for the redress of grievances. And if the county, state, or federal government seek to obtain details regarding those who signed these petitions, you will be shielded. The person responsible for obtaining the signatures who signs the top of these signature sheets will sign, if necessary, will sign an affidavit attesting to the fact that all signatures collected and counted were, in fact, signatures of U.S. citizens. Nothing more can be required, or this would be a direct abridgment of your rights. And we're not going to let that happen. And this is why we need you to get involved, at least by signing, at least by showing up and helping people get these signatures. Now, I mean, if you don't want to be the guy signing the affidavit or the gal, whatever. But we need Thomas Jefferson's, we need Patrick Henry's to stand out in the public and have people collect signatures in holding government accountable. If we want to be the generation that cleanses the sins of our fathers and our mothers, of our ancestors, there we go, that's a better word. If we're going to clean and cleanse this nation from their sins, we have to take the stand now. That's the only way we can get our hands into the water, the cleansing water of the Constitution, and wash this blood away. I say this. Only he knew what we would be facing and what we needed. And I am telling you that everything we need is right here in this Constitution. Nobody can break these arguments. No one. There's all sorts of lawyers out there that want to bend and twist and soak and use precedents and case law. I'm sorry. Show me in the Constitution where case law and precedents has any bearing on the Constitution. It has none, nor is it even allowed in the Constitution. Oh, interesting, right? Show me where the courts have this right to use case law and precedents. So what's holding you back from getting involved? Seriously, what's holding you back from getting involved? Now, one of the things I need to address, and I think I'll probably take this, start this right now. And so let me basically identify this person, and his name is Ken, but I don't want to say his last name. I got an email from Ken, and basically what he asked, and this is kind of in little segments, he says, can you talk about how the Supreme Court is not doing us justice and the judges that the Federalists said that they were constitutional judges? And so I'm just reading what he's asking me to talk about. The injustice of the January 6th prisoners, the delay of trials, the abuse that they're facing, and so forth. And this is regarding a group. Then he actually cites this group. I think it's Cowboys for Trump. And I've not heard of the group, but it doesn't matter. Let me dive into answering the question, you know, what and why and how. Bottom line, when we got out of the gate of ratifying the Constitution, there were efforts afoot by Alexander Hamilton to aggrandize government, to start leaning towards implied powers and to convince America that within this contract there are implied powers. These were completely refuted by James Madison. These were refuted well before, during the ratification phase, before the federal government was even formed. And so even though Alexander Hamilton soothsayed and convinced Congress and others to do things that they had no authority to do, there's no doubt in my mind the states have always possessed the authority to step in. The states have always possessed the authority to force the federal government into complete compliance, and they possess that exact same constitutional authority today to fix these problems. When we look at what the heck's going on, I can't tell you enough how the problem starts with us. If you're not going to stand up and hold your government accountable about the atrocities and the persecution and the deaths that are being caused by our own government, then who else do we blame but ourselves? We have to take a stand. Okay, so when we look at what's going on, and let's go very specifically into the little bit of history of how John Marshall actually started making rulings in his opinions of the facts of a case. Even though Madison never challenged the facts of the case, nor did he challenge the opinions, because opinions meant nothing. Anybody and everybody could use hyperbole. It doesn't matter. As long as the rulings were correct, that's it. They stand. Bottom line. And so this is one of the reasons why Madison never stood up against the seven. And John Marshall made seven hallmark rulings, seven or eight. And in these rulings, like Marilyn v. McCullough is one of them, where he postulates this idea that the federal government is supreme in all things. Well, he's wrong. They're not supreme in all things. They're only supreme under those things enumerated in the Constitution, and only those things. So when he started making and redefining the Constitution in his opinions, these opinions were used later on in rulings instead of actually using the ratification debates and how the Constitution was defined, the terms and conditions of the Constitution. Oh no, I think we got a UN helicopter coming in here. They're looking for me. Anyway, you probably hear it in the background. Anyway, the reality is that John Marshall was blathering. His opinions were just hyperbole. There was no basis of constitutionality. He never cited the ratification debates. He only injected his opinions. And so when we come back, I'll finish diving into all of this. We're going to dive into what happened on January 6th and how, you know, your rights have been eroded. If you don't start demanding your rights of petitioning government for the redress of grievances, then it's all over, baby. We'll be right back after this with some more, I'll just say, keeping it the same tune, groovy. We'll be right back.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so let's kind of dive into, you know, let me just keep the the tone, the tenor. I have to laugh. You know, having grown up when I did, you know, because I was kind of post-60s, and there was always this use of lingo or this hip jive that, you know, everybody used and included. And you get this crap today. I mean, it seems like it's cyclic. You know, there's a point in time where everybody, you know, changes their vernacular to, you know, include the, you know, the LOLs or whatever seems to be hip at the time. And so having grown up with the groovy, I always heard people say those things, you know, and go, come on, just speak English. Now, not that I'm the best, but I do recognize that, you know, lingo has a place on the street, but it doesn't have a place in the discourses, you know, in serious conversations and discourses. Anyway, let me dive back into this whole concept of what happened. And what ended up happening, not just on January 6th, but building up to this, when we started looking at, you know, John Marshall and this unconstitutional assertions from the bench, they started way back then. And as a matter of fact, if you read Why Counties Matter Most, I'll point out that in 1837, the federal courts, the Supreme Court, basically went to Congress and they published their first set of rules of how they were going to, you know, manage themselves and how they were going to operate. And this, in 1837, was when they started introducing civil law, wandering and actually separating themselves from common law standards. I'm telling you, had this happened in 1789, George Mason and many of the framers that were anti-federalist, you know, when they were actually creating this new federal government, they started doing those very specific things, everybody would have revolted and they would have shred the Constitution that fast. And then they would have said, well, we got to go back to the drawing board and we're just going to allow Continental Congress to exist. We're just going to put people back into Continental Congress, because they would not have accepted that type of, I'll just say, perversion, or I should say they would not have accepted the fact that the federal government had all of the abilities to basically make up whatever they wanted to do, that they had those types of general powers. Folks, the Constitution was justified in every ratification debate as a enumerated and specified Constitution. There were no general powers granted. They couldn't just say, well, because we have this responsibility of human life, we now can, you know, regulate anything and everything regarding the aspects of life. We can even determine the termination of life if necessary, because it's a general power. And if we have too many citizens, we can start, you know, just terminating life at whatever point in time. I mean, giving them that level of discretion. They don't have that. So as we kind of look, what was also happening at the exact same time, and even before this 1837 ruling, we can see how Congress started creeping out of the box in admitting new states into the Union. And it was 1816 in the Indiana Enabling Act, where they actually started fiddling with the sovereignty of a state. And they were using the Northwest Ordinance as the vehicle or the mechanism of justifying their ability to do this. But let's be clear. The Northwest Ordinance was superseded by the Constitution. When the Constitution was ratified, that document was dead. Because there were no mechanisms within the Articles of Confederation of truly admitting states into the Union and how to do this. Ah, but it was actually enumerated in the Constitution. Therefore, the Constitution being ratified by the states superseded the Northwest Ordinance. I deal with lawyers all the time that give praise to the Northwest Ordinance. And I think that might be more of their theocratic side than their understanding of the Constitution and their understanding of liberty. I mean, I understand that we people need to be, you know, regulated by our churches for a common morality, for enlightenment and those types of things, but not our government. Government shouldn't be involved in meddling in, especially the federal government, should not be involved in meddling in religion. Now, it's a little bit different for states, and we can go down that rat hole. But the fact of the matter is that when they started admitting states with Indiana and started taking latitude, by 1820, they started inflicting slavery upon states. So the admitting states into the Union and creating disadvantages on states more and more and more, by the time they hit 1849, when they created this unconstitutional power called the Department of Interior, they were creating all sorts of federal land. I read lawyers briefing this constitutionality of federal land, and I laugh, and I go, here is an idiot that doesn't understand our Constitution and believes in case law and precedents. I'm telling you, the best thing we can do is get rid of the lawyers. I mean, there's that Eagle song, right? Or maybe it's a Don Henley song. Get rid of the lawyers, get rid of them now. Because they are one of our biggest problems. They're creating one of the greatest, misconceptions. They're creating the greatest subversive perversion of our Constitution. The Corporation Act, or I should say the corporations of the 1871 Organic Act that Congress created when they basically slapped out, and there's another term for that in the Marine Corps, but I won't use it on the air, when they basically kicked out what they called the radicals, what history today calls radical Republicans, those who were actually doing what they could in preserving the liberty. Now, they were making mistakes big time by over-asserting power in the Reconstruction. The federal government had no authority to reconstruct. They have no authority to have FEMA. They have no authority to step in, regardless of how big all of our hearts are bleeding for what happened in, you know, from Katrina, what happened to the people that have been devastated by tornadoes or earthquakes. The federal government has no legal, legitimate authority to help. You want them to have that authority? You've got to amend the Constitution. They just can't spend money and then pick winners and losers and go to Haiti and help those people, regardless of how nice and noble it is. They have no constitutional authority to do those things. So as we started looking at, you know, all of these things that started happening, the federal government by 1871 had completely galvanized their self-powering pill. In other words, they were they had completed the self-licking ice cream cone. There was nothing that they felt that they couldn't go and obtain and seek and operate, possess. The roles, responsibilities, powers, and property became unlimited. They became our God. And this is how evil they had become. When I say these people, there were many people that did not know, but those who knew what they were doing and shifted and completely perverted the hierarchy of our government by putting the federal government on top instead of our counties, completely perverted and set us up for a very evil government to be able to begin waging war and destroying us in these days. Which is why people are dying and people are suffering, because our government has powers that they've assumed that are absolutely unconstitutional and antithetical to how the Constitution was justified. I don't care what these other conservative entertainers say. I don't care what these people who have served in office and these lawyers who have studied and studied and studied, you know, all of the nuances of these different little things that they think is important. The actual terms and definitions of that Constitution are the only things that are important when we're talking about the Constitution, which is why your county constitutional compliance committees are so important, and that's what we do with these petitions. Go read the 8 expectations. Those are the catalyst of reclaiming the republic. It forces the full audit. It forces every government, every person in government that has actually taken an oath to reconcile their position or get out. You have no business being in government if you're not reconciling what you're doing with the Constitution in its fullest capacity. So, as we start looking at, you know, where we are today, and we look at all of these assumptions and everything else, this is how we've gotten to this point where on January 6th, 2021, Congress, actually before January 6th, I've said this, when Congress decided, when the federal government decided to lock down D.C., and make it unavailable to we the people, they violated the Constitution. They committed the insurrection against the Constitution and we the people. Congress can make no law abridging the right of the people to petition government for the redress of grievances. On January 6th, when D.C. was locked down, and we the people could not enter into the halls of government to petition them, we had our rights denied unconstitutionally. They denied our civil rights. Now, I'm going to say civil rights because I know people, it's just a trigger word for these quasi-pseudo-conservative constitutionalists. Civil rights are rights that are actually legally protected. And if it's in the Constitution, that means it's legally protected, which means that they are civil rights. They're inalienable rights as well, but they did not include all inalienable rights within the Constitution, which is why the 9th Amendment actually kind of covers those unmentioned inalienable rights. But bottom line, the Constitution legally protects us, folks, so they are civil rights, period. And the only way they can actually take away those rights is not just by removing the Bill of Rights, but by granting the government the ability. So let me be clear here, because if you don't understand the Constitution, you deserve the backhand because you haven't been listening to this show, you know, for a long time. I should say I should be backhanded. I apologize. If you just started listening, then welcome. But now we're going to give you the gold or the key to the mint, because the Constitution is a power of attorney. It is a specified, enumerated power of attorney. And it was constantly justified that, and they stated this in the ratification debates, that only those things delegated are what they can actually make treaties on. The Supreme Court's jurisdiction is limited to those things within the Constitution. Is health, CO2, is life, like abortion, is cigarettes. Is there anything that, you know, we look at the Supreme Court and their doors are open to every matter under the sun today? And the Constitution says otherwise. They only have jurisdiction over those things arising under this Constitution. So when the Scopes trial, when they dictated that evolution was to be taught in school, they created a law respecting religion, therefore they violated that, as well as they violated Article 3 of the Constitution because they took on a case they had no jurisdiction in standing in. Folks, understanding that the Constitution is a power of attorney, if we got rid of the Bill of Rights, we would be better off in some ways. The only reason why we're better off with the Bill of Rights today is because of state governments, because the states have not taken the Bill of Rights and integrated them into the Constitution. Many states have done that, but not all of them. Not all of them. So the fact is that the 14th Amendment is that necessary nugget from God that actually protects us from our state and county government from making laws that abridge our privileges and immunities. This equal protection under the law has been completely perverted in the redefinition by the Supreme Court. In Why Counties Matter Most, I point this out. I show how they have been very deliberate in perverting the Constitution. They know where the Constitution has created these barriers for them to affect us. This is why they had to soak the Constitution into these cases so they could twist and pervert and change, redefine something they had no, they don't have the authority to redefine the Constitution. And they get away with it all the time because they told us they can do it. Oh, isn't that nice? It's like a child telling their parent, well, I can do this. The problem is we don't realize that we're the parents in this relationship. And there is the problem. So, as we kind of look at this oppression that has come as they actually violated our rights, like I basically said, and this is why this disclosure, this signature disclosure sheet is important. Because if you're exercising your right, they cannot turn that into a law. In other words, those people who broke in to their building, they did not commit a crime. The crime was actually the fact that those doors were locked while government was open. If government is operating, if they are open, if they are in office, they're in chambers, those doors must be unlocked. That is our government. Bottom line, we actually have a government of elitists. This is why you need to understand why the color-coded Constitution is the most critical document that we're using today. This is what we're using to create the Table of Tyranny. The Table of Tyranny is literally an accounting for every direct violation of the Constitution. It accounts for every unconstitutional assumption of roles, responsibilities, powers, and property done by the federal government. It accounts for the executive orders and the breaches of legislative powers by the president by assuming laws. And it's the same thing. It basically accounts for the abridgment, or I should say the breach of legislative powers by the Supreme Court by creating laws. Folks, when we look at this, I mean, if you read my next article that's coming out regarding the First Amendment petition, I liken the necessity of identifying the problem, articulating the problem to the nth degree, because until you do that, you cannot clean up government. Until you have a solvent that can actually permeate down into the pores of the skin to pull out the germs and the disease and the infections and the filth and the disgusting, dirt and so forth that's just in our hands and on our hands. until we actually dip our hands into that purifying solvent. And that solvent is the Constitution. The Constitution demands that only these things the government can do. Anything else that's not enumerated, or those things that have nugatory, or I should say further declaratory restrictions upon government, which is the Bill of Rights, then they have no business doing this. One of the petitions we're working with, and it's coming out of Wyoming, is the unconstitutional spending petition. We're basically taking this concept of how the enumerated powers are the only things that they have the authority to spend money on. If it's medication, or I should say, if it's anything regarding healthcare, anything regarding healthcare the government is involved in at the state and or at the federal level, because it is not enumerated within either of those constitutions, then every dollar they spend on healthcare is unconstitutional. Every dollar they spend on welfare in subsidy, basically giving subsistence to people, is unconstitutional. Giving subsistence to corporations, bailing out corporations, the TARP bailouts, all of those things were unconstitutional. They only have the authority to write a check for those things we have authorized. This is the fraud. This actually helps you understand that when you look at that debt clock, that right there is all fraud, because every dollar that we're spending since 1900, almost every dollar that has been contributed to that debt can be accounted for as unconstitutional. We would have if we actually separated and went through every year of the operation of the federal government spending money they had no authority to do, and the interest that had been compounding on that debt, America would have a surplus that you couldn't even fathom the surplus that we had. And bottom line is, we're not a bank. We can't be a bank. We can't be paying interest. Well, we can be if it's a legitimate debt, but we can't be paying debt. We can't be paying interest on an illegitimate debt. That's illegitimate interest. Sorry. See, I forgive me. I look at things and I say, okay, this is just, it's going to be funny. I got to say it. I remember my father told me, because there'd been cases where I was actually looking at a person that was going to shoot me, and there's other situations where my father says, you know, one of these days your humor is going to get you killed, because I tend to lend to humor as a defensive mechanism. I've said that before. So anyway. Anywho, I'm hoping you understand how this has all happened, what's going on, and the atrocities that are being committed against United States citizens. It's not just the January 6th folks. And as a matter of fact, the greatest deceit that is being given in America today, that is going and basically wreaking havoc in the ranks of the patriots, is the sovereign citizen movement, the general assembly movement, these assemblies, this sovereign capacity, not paying taxes. We should not be paying taxes. What we should be doing is holding government accountable. And everybody that goes down this path, it's the same thing with tactical civics. Everybody that is using these methods of trying to protect yourself and not petitioning government for all of these atrocities, you are continuing the blame on yourself. We have the responsibility. We have the power. I remember my son, when he was growing up, loved He-Man. And He-Man always said, I have the power. Folks, you have the unlimited power of the Constitution in holding government accountable. The day you demand that the law be fulfilled, that those who fail to support the Constitution in accordance to Section 3 of the 14th Amendment be removed, and removed immediately. I can only tell you that getting you smart is the best investment I can make. I'm not here to make a penny. I don't do endorsements for any money. If I endorse a company or if I endorse a product, it is not because I'm being paid, nor with, if, you know, like Timber Nation, I used to run these ads or promos and so forth. I've really tried to scale everything down. I've never once asked anybody since I've started this Reclaiming the Republic on Red State Talk Radio on a daily basis. I've never asked anybody to actually give me a break on, you know, on their products or do anything like that. This has not been about me. If there's a corporation or a business out there that's making a great product that is, you know, hey, I will share that with you. There are all sorts of ways to help you save money, and I'm okay with that. But what is paramount is saving ourselves. There are ways we can save money, but this show is not about, I'm not a consumer advocacy. I mean, if I was going to be grinding an axe, I would be grinding an axe on this pet insurance crap like Trupanion and Embrace, you know, those types of things. I mean, I'd be happy to, you know, be a consumer advocacy, but the problems that we're dealing with are so overwhelming. We don't have time to be entertained anymore. We don't have time to worry about, you know, the meals in the next day or two. We have to start actually holding our government accountable every day of the week. You need to get involved. You need to start printing out these petitions. If you're going to go down this path, send me an email. If you're going to go down this path, we want to help you. We want you to be successful. Your success is our success. When I say our, I mean America's success. Every time people take a stand, and every time, you know, the bully is pushed back into the closet, America wins. Every time we do the right thing, we gain ground. You want to restore prayer in school? You want to be able to have the freedom within your state to determine what you can do? You need to take a stand, because those people who are in office in your state and in your county, if they're not taking these petitions and endorsing them and running with them, you need to vote them out this year. You're better off voting for a Democrat. You're better off voting for a bad person, because then at least everybody will acknowledge that we've got 2 years to get rid of this person. Kathy McMorris Rodgers has decided not to run for re-election. Is it because she's rich enough now? She's siphoned off enough money out of that trough where she's become, you know, where she feels like she has her independence of, you know, financial protection. I'm telling you, people don't step away from that trough of the millions of dollars that pour into their lap. She's a millionaire because of her service, not because she's done us good or justice. So here's the thing. She's actually stepping out, and the person that's stepping in is just as contemptible as she is. We need to vote for a Democrat in that legislative district or that congressional district. Then we at least know we've got a problem to fix in 2 years instead of her dumping this problem on our laps. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.